Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Juliette Blake on the show today. Juliette is the founder and CEO of Moxies. Welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Juliette. I am so delighted that we can make this work today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we have to give a shout out to Genevieve Craker. She really insisted. She goes, you two have to know each other. And as so many times, what often happens is if it's somebody that I really trust, I go on and have that conversation. And I absolutely love you. And I love what you're doing with your platform, Juliette. And I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you today.
Well, thank you. I know. So, I love when you connect with somebody and then they're like, oh, you have to meet this person because they also see that like initial like spark or energy or why there would be something synergistic to connect on. So grateful to have met you.
Yes, I agree. Well, before we jump into everything you're doing today, and you're doing a lot, you know, I really want you to take me back to growing up, because I know that you grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut. You're in Greenwich now. I think you moved away for just a little bit. In fact, we'll talk about this, but you got your degree in anthropology from Washington University.
I did. I spent 4 years in St. Louis.
I know. I wish that we had met then. That would have been fun to have taken you to coffee while you were in college.
Loved that.
I know. But, you know, I think some of your early experiences, well, I know they did, Juliette, really have been pivotal in influencing what you do today, even. And, yeah, I'd love for you to go back and I think you started drawing these cool girls at the age of 10. Yeah, tell us more about that. So I know your mom's a graphic artist, so you probably got a little bit of her, a lot of her talent there. But what inspired that?
Yeah, so we were coming back from a family vacation. I was bored and I started doodling these girls. So I was 10 and I doodled them in my mom's Filofax, right? Like, let's really take it back. Like, kids are like, what's a Filofax these days? What's even a planner? That's not digital. So I started doodling these girls in her Filofax and I called them cool girls. And it was just, you know, little doodles that I had done. My mom was like, oh, these are really cute. And she kept them. And kind of pair that with my sister, Olivia. So she's 5 years younger than I am. She's actually the incredibly talented artist. Like, if we're like, I'm also creative, but if we're looking at from an artistic talent perspective, like, that is Olivia. She got that fully from my mom. And she then always used to draw herself with these big, like, pigtails on the, like, these big buns and like pigtails on the top of her head. And so my mom kind of took these two drawings of Olivia and I, and we just started playing around with them. It was a hobby for a long time. We created a Juliet character and an Olivia character. And this, you know, goes all the way back to the first company that I started. But essentially for Olivia's birthday party, we ended up making these characters for all of her friends. And that is really where it was the first time that we showed, you know, girls this art. We really hadn't, it was just a hobby for so long. And her friends absolutely loved them. So it was really that first kind of, okay, let's taking these doodles and then like bringing them to life for us as a hobby and then like showing them to other girls. And this was back in, I mean, I was 13. So my sister was 8. This was like 2003, I think is probably when that was. So a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, you guys, you and your mom really kind of turned this into something when you were 16 and you had Miss O and friends, O being Olivia after Olivia and friends. But, you know, I mean, I read a lot, Juliet, about how even at that birthday party, you were 13, your little sister was 8. And you were noticing some things, even like the way the girls were talking and what they were talking about. And, you know, can you like dig into that a little bit? And then I would love for you to kind of talk about the research, because you've done a lot of research around this as well.
Totally. Yeah. And yeah, I could talk about this forever. What I noticed at that birthday party. So yes, I was 13, you know, I was thick in the middle of middle school. My friends and I were dealing with all of the middle school things that, you know, they change how they happen, but like what happens in middle school, especially for girls, it remains consistent over generations and generations. So my friends and I were dealing with those things in middle school, but it was that first time that I started seeing some of the stuff happening with Olivia and her friends. And like I said, they were just turning 8. It was her 8th birthday party. And it was honestly really shocking for me. So, you know, they were clicking off and leaving each other out. They were talking about their boyfriends. They were talking about how they didn't want to eat birthday cake because they didn't want to get fat. And I was like, what is happening? Like, this is wild to see. And honestly, as the older sister, it was also like, very upsetting to see. I was like, what? Like my baby sister and her sweet friends like are already kind of moving on to this like next phase. And it was also really interesting because at that time, like tween wasn't a word. Like tween wasn't something that people were like talking about. It was like you were a little girl or you were a teenager. And this like in between time was truly ignored and truly not discussed. And when we look at it from a research perspective, it's actually like the most crucial time for a young girl's development. It really sets the stage for the building blocks really for the rest of her life, especially when it comes to social, emotional, confidence, self-esteem, like those types of things. And when you actually look at the data, confidence levels in girls fall by 40% between the ages of 8 and 14, which is like pretty upsetting. And so like it is truly like that pivotal and crucial time. We also see, I mean, there's a lot that we can talk more about this later, but like when we look at currently now what is happening with current social platforms and how they are disproportionately negatively affecting girls and why they are disproportionately negatively affecting girls, so much of it has to do with the developmental stage that they're at and the vulnerabilities and sensitivities that they have during the specific period of time. So, you know, tween has always been something that has been really like near and dear to my heart in what I built before with Miss Owen Friends, now what I'm building with Moxie's, because it still is this very overlooked time. And it is a hard demographic to specifically build for because, you know, they're not little girls anymore, but they're not teenagers yet. And it is a very nuanced time in a young girl's life. And so, you know, I think tweens are, it's an incredibly special time and such an important time. And so for me, thinking about how we can use research to build for them in ways that are actually setting them up for success has always been something that, you know, I've been doing for so long and now just kind of building that into something new.
Yeah. I mean, what really started as a hobby, Juliet, is now your life's work. And your calling. I mean, I feel like you're called to it, right? Yes. And I cannot agree more that it is so, so critical because of all the noises, yeah. So many noises and so many noises out there telling little girls what they're supposed to be and, you know, what they're not supposed to be. And yeah, so, but, you know, it was pretty incredible though, because when you were in at WashU, so your mom and you and your mom turned this into a brand when you were 16 and really turned it into something. But then when you're at WashU, you received a significant investment from Procter & Gamble. And you and I have had a little side conversation about that because your dad was an executive at Colgate. And he said he felt a little weird about that. But but you got this significant investment from Procter & Gamble to turn it into a global brand. And I would love to, I think I read even, Juliet, that at the time, this time, the company, you weren't even out of college yet, and the company was valued like at $15 million, you know, even at that point in time. But, you know, tell us a little bit about all the brand included, because I'm like blown away by all you guys did. You had a show on Disney. You had books that came out of that. Tell us more about everything it included.
Yeah. Yeah. So Miso and Friends was really like this lifestyle social brand for tween girls. We also were teen as well, but like it was, you know, focusing on tween, a lot of user generated content. After that investment from Procter & Gamble, we were able to grow to one of the top girls websites globally. So Miso and Friends ranked number 3 right under Teen Vogue and 17. A lot of like articles and prizes and games and giveaways. And we then were able to take that IP and created one of the first original series with YouTube Originals. And then we partnered with Disney. That was honestly like one of the most special experiences of my life. I'll tap more into that in a second. But we did books. We did licensing. We created apps. We did a lot. And we were like, again, this initial investment from Procter & Gamble really enabled us to be able to like grow in scale and still also, you know, be this like small family business. My dad was also working with us too. Again, his executive marketing experience from Colgate. And, you know, we were really able to turn Miso and Friends into something like incredibly special and incredibly meaningful too. And I think for me, the series that we did with YouTube Originals and then partnered with Disney on, that was called Hyperlinked. And it was actually inspired by my story of starting Miso and Friends. So like the characters' names, Juliet, Miso is the character. The parents' names are Hermine and Paul. Like it's pretty crazy, like to see that story of like my life, like come to screen in such like a powerful way. And one of the coolest things about that series is, so the show, you know, was basically based on a girl who wanted to start a website to help her sister and her friends through middle school while dealing with middle school issues of their own. So the story that you just heard me talk about. And it also really focused on entrepreneurship, positive female friendships, girls working together, and then had a big focus on STEM and computer science. And what was really incredible about that series is there was this external study done that showed that girls who watched just the first episode of Hyperlinked, so that is just 22 minutes of content, were 11% more likely to pursue a career in computer science than girls who didn't. So it really goes to show you the positive impact that content can have if we put, you know, well-being at the core, if we try to squash like gender stereotypes, if we bring empowerment and real messaging that is related to the real demo that you are building for in meaningful and authentic ways, if that is how we tell the story. And so I think it's such a great example of, you know, what we can do with content and what we can do with media and what we can do with gamification. Hence why, you know, I'm now building Moxies. But, you know, that's something that was a really, really, really cool experience to build, to do, to create, to be part of. It was pretty cool.
That's when I, when I learned that, Juliet, I'm like, I am so in, because, you know, I mean, I run a tech company and we talk to clients all the time. And I will tell you, in fact, I just had breakfast with a client last week and the conversation was about there are not enough women in the STEM fields. Really. In fact, she has no woman on her leadership team. She's at the top, which is phenomenal, but there's no other women. And, you know, I've always said, I feel like we've got to start earlier introducing girls to STEM and to STEAM and saying, it's cool. It's cool to build websites and it's cool to be this, right? There's, and I cannot remember Madeline. I can't remember the who this is attributed
to. Is it Madeline Denono from Gina Davis?
The quote that says you can't be what you can't see.
You can see her, you can be her. So we worked with Madeline Denono and the Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media on Hyperlinked. So they were actually one of the, like, Gina and Madeline were advisors on the series. And so it's basically like, if she can see it, she can be it. And so much of that is that accurate representation. And the other organization that actually uses some of that messaging too, that the Gina Davis Institute also collaborates with, is this foundation called Lyda Hill. And so Lyda Hill Philanthropies, and they essentially invest in women's STEM initiatives. And we worked with them on Hyperlinked as well. And I received it. They're actually the reason why we are able to build Moxies, because I also received a grant from Lyda Hill Philanthropies to build out this first version of Moxies. And so really for them, it's being able to put, put women center stage when it comes to any type of STEM advancements. And they're both like incredible organizations that I have been so honored to be partnered with, because what the work that they do and how they are actually like moving the needle in truly meaningful ways is incredible.
Yeah, that is so awesome. We'll put those in the show notes to those, Juliet, in case there's other people that are interested. Yeah, totally. But yeah, we could probably do a whole podcast just on that. But I've got a lot more questions for you. So let me ask you something. What was the biggest leap of faith for you when you took and turned Mrs. O and Friends into this global media brand? What was going on in your mind? Was it more like ignorance is bliss, like not really knowing what you're getting into? Or, you know, were there some doubts even that you had to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, I do think a little bit was ignorance is bliss, learning as I was going and not really knowing the difference. I think that a lot of that was attributed to the fact that I was young, right? I was in high school and then in college when Miss O and Friends was really growing. So I was just kind of learning as I was doing. And, you know, there was obviously a ton of mistakes that were made along the way. Sometimes I'll like see like an email I sent when I was like 23 and I'm like, oh my God, how did I send that email? Like, this is horrifying. And this is, I thought this was like, I'm like so embarrassed for myself. But I did really just kind of have to like learn as I went. And I do think, you know, a big part of that was with Miss O and Friends, I did have my family support, right? I was working with both my mom and my dad. And so it was this family business that like together, we made leaps of faith together. A really big one was before we received the investment from Procter & Gamble, you know, my family had invested a lot of their personal money into Miss O and Friends. And we then as a family decided to invest the money that my parents had put aside for me for college. And so that was absolutely a big leap of faith, right? Like that. And I was a part of that conversation. It wasn't, you know, not included in that conversation at all, but that was absolutely a big leap of faith. You know, money my parents had been saving since I was born to like put into this business. And, you know, I think now, like, especially like now as I'm building Moxies, the leaps of faith that I have had has been a little bit more individual because I'm not, I do still work with my mom and we have a really close working, she's so involved in Moxies, but Moxies is like my company now. And so I think so much of what I learned with Miss O and Friends is absolutely like setting me up for success in like this next phase with Moxies. But like, this is a lot of like personal, like, leaps of faith when it comes to what I'm building now. And I'm the one like solely responsible for it. So I think like, you know, yes, there are moments where that's like really scary, but I also do feel like I'm really set up for success because I was, as a young person, like put into so many positions where I was presenting to senior leadership, right? At Fortune 50 companies, like when I was 16 years old, which it's crazy. It was just something that like I did. And now, you know, being in my, on the later side of my 30s, I'm like, wow, like that was over 15 years ago. I cannot believe I did that. I'm almost like more nervous now sometimes when I speak with like senior executives than I was when I was 16, because I also didn't know better.
Right. Ignorance is bliss, ignorance, Julia. Is bliss. You didn't know enough to know what could go wrong, or, you know, to even be scared of it probably. And I think there's a lot of beauty in that. I mean, Greg and I were younger when we founded our company, and you know, I say to people now, I mean, we really just didn't know what we didn't know, and we just did, you know, you just do, right? So
absolutely.
We call it flying the plane while you're, or building the plane while you're flying.
Exactly, literally. And that's what being a founder, I mean, yeah. That's what being like a founder is so much. It's like, yep, is it going to work? Yep. I don't know. Let's see. Yeah.
I bet there were some things that you learned though during that time. You know, I mean, really probably the building of the confidence, yeah. Probably a lot of resilience. Did you have any setbacks that you can remember in those early days, Julia?
Oh my gosh, we had so many setbacks. I think one of the biggest it was a setback, but I also think everything happened the way that it should have happened. So like, that's again how I absolutely believe that. But when I was graduating college, we had an offer from one of the largest media and entertainment companies you could imagine to acquire Miss Owen Friends. And it was like, we went in to pitch them on a Friday. We got the offer on a Monday. Like, it was like pretty crazy. And I was then going to go work for that company. I was going to move to a different state after college and like go live there and all these things. Like, everything was like getting set up as, you know, like, you know, as kind of this next phase to be acquired. And then the deal fell through. And it was one of those things that it really did seem like a done deal. And a big lesson for me to learn that it was absolutely not. Like, I thought I was graduating college with this, like, selling my company, like moving to a new city with this like incredible new job.
Amazing job.
And then that wasn't the case at all. And it was definitely like, it was definitely a shock. And it was an important learning experience, right? Like, it's not a done deal until that wired money is showing up in your bank account and you see it, right? Like, contract sign also doesn't mean anything. So I think for me, that's, you know, absolutely something that I take in now as I'm building Moxies. And as we're talking with investors and all of those things, is I learned that lesson a very kind of like hard and painful way. At the same time, I also know that if that deal had gone through, we, Miss Owen Friends, would likely not have existed past 2 years from that, based off of all of the internal restructuring that ended up happening with the company, which is why the deal ended up essentially following through. And all the other acquisitions that they had made that then just kind of like got cut. So, that's...
Well, and it could have turned into something different. You would have lost control.
Oh, yeah.
Juliet, and it could have been something entirely different than what you had envisioned too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things always happen for a reason, but I had some of those lessons as well early on in my career. You know, I was in corporate sales for a Fortune 500 company, and I'll never forget like having sold like one of the biggest deals, you know, in the region. And, had already banked on that and everything. And at the 11th hour, our competitor came in and undercut us. Ugh. And I lost the deal at the 11th hour. And by then, there was nothing to do. You know, we couldn't salvage it. But I'm very cautious anymore. You just don't know, right? Until you said, like, the money's been wired in the bank and the ink is dry.
Not even, like, the confirmation of wire. Like, you see it in there.
Exactly. Well, I got so much to talk about with Moxie. So tell me that transition. Now, I'm going to ask you a few questions, yeah. And then we do need to take a quick break, but I've got a lot more questions for you. So tell me about the transition to Moxie's and what you're doing today.
Yeah. So kind of, as I mentioned, like I was able to see firsthand with Miss Owen Friends and Hyperlinked, if we can, you know, build for girls, what types of positive outcomes we can have. And then we see right now, there's so much research out there that I'm sure many of the listeners have seen, whether it's headlines or, you know, really gotten deep into themselves, really starting, you know, last summer with the Anxious Generation coming out and really sparking a movement around parents just being more hyper aware of what's happening with, you know, social platforms. And when we look at that research, you know, it's very clear how girls are disproportionately and negatively affected when it comes to how they're consuming from social media. And so what I really wanted to do was think about, okay, like, let's figure what's the problem here, right? And the problem that I see, the biggest problem, is that big tech is not built for youth. Like, it's designed to be harmful and dangerous and addictive. We know that as adults. Those things are not youth-centric. There's no well-being at any core of how they are building, and they have to monetize off of attention. And so really rethinking, okay, how can I reimagine what digital looks like for girls? And thinking about, like, what are the features that girls want? What are the things that they want to do online? What are the pain points that parents are having, that girls are having? Where is that disconnect? Because also at the same time, we know our kids' lives are more digital. Like, whether we like that or not, that is the reality that we are living in. Digital is part of our lives and our children's lives, and we need to figure out how to help them build a healthy relationship with it, how to set them up for success using digital. So that's really what I'm doing with Moxie's, is creating this safe and healthy gamified social platform that is for girls. So for that, you know, 8 to 12-year-old tween girl, where she can play and create and connect and earn. So all the fun things we know that she wants to do online, but avoiding that toxic and harmful content, avoiding those dark pattern persuasive design features, and instead really building with this research-backed, safe-by-design foundation that's focused on positive youth development. So instead, we're building things like digital literacy. We're building confidence. We're building this healthy relationship with technology, really setting, again, girls up for success as they enter the digital world for the first time. When they ask, you know, mom, dad, guardian, like, hey, I want to talk to my friends, or I want to play this game, or I want to create avatars or build, they can go to Moxie's, and like, we can have this really strong foundation for them that grows with them and helps them, you know, helps them as they continue to explore the digital world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love it because it, to your point, digital is not going away. It is a part of who we are, right? Every, you know, devices, you know, they're going to be connected to devices. And to your point, Juliet, too, they want to connect with their friends. They want to use this. I see this with our 12-year-old grandson. I mean, he loves the game, but it's really about connecting with his friends at school and having the chats and, you know, this sort of thing. But you had said something to me, because it can be very addictive, but you guys do something really unique. And tell our listeners about what you do with Moxie's that's very unique. To put guardrails, if you will, around it.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing is we want to start to build that autonomy and independence and enable that connection. Because also from a developmental perspective, that connection is to their peers is so crucial. And back when, you know, like when I was growing up, like we'd call our friends, right? And we'd talk on the phone, and kids don't have that these days. And so like, we'll talk to girls and be like, okay, well, if you don't have access to a device, how do you talk to your friends outside of school? And they're like, oh, we can't, we don't. And so when you look at that from a developmental lens, that's actually not good. Like, that's missing a key component of that connectivity and that like community. So what we're doing is, again, putting these safeguards on that connectedness, because again, we know it's something that girls want to do and is developmentally important for them to do. So for example, one of the main features of Moxie's is our chat. And so a few things that are different with our chat, like when you think about it from an iMessage or a WhatsApp, is you are joining, girls are joining groups that they are already a part of in real life. So it could be any extracurricular, it could be sports, right? After school clubs, Girl Scout troops, friends from sleepaway camp, like any, again, any community group, neighborhood friends, whatever it might be, play from a place of worship. And they are joining those groups, and then they are able to, you know, talk with those friends in that group chat. What's different also is it's moderated. So that's something that we heard from parents as a pain point for them. There's moderation that's built in. And then my favorite feature, that is also parents' favorite features, is the chat shuts off at 8 p.m. and it doesn't turn back on until 7:30 the next day. And so that for us is a really big thing of how can we, from a foundational perspective, going back to that safe by design, how can we build in those healthy habits and healthy screen time limits early? So you think about that 8-year-old who for the first time is wanting to talk to her friends in a group chat. She's now is learning that, okay, at 8 p.m. chat shuts off because I need to set healthy boundaries for myself. I need to decompress. I need to move on. And the other thing too is the chat shuts off and you can't go back and scroll in the chat either. So like chat is like fully disconnected. You can still build avatars and you can still play quests. So there's still, which are the two other parts of Moxie's. So you still have that opportunity for creative play and that quest and skill building through Moxie's, but that peer communication shuts off. And the other thing too, is we have limited notifications. So it's not that constant notification every time someone is messaging you, there will be one, maybe two notifications a day. And there's also the chats are organized in threads. So it's not just this like never ending doom scroll of, oh, I haven't been on and I've missed all this stuff and I'm going to see 200 notifications and feel so overwhelmed. And so for us, that was such a pain point that we discussed with both parents and girls of parents. Like when we talk to parents about group chat, they're like, well, no, I don't want my daughter on that platform or I don't want her in that chat, but I also don't want her to miss out on these key social moments. And I think that's right. The biggest thing is these key social moments. Again, going back to the developmental, like, appropriateness of connecting with your friends. But at the same time, these girls don't have digital literacy skills yet. Like they don't know. And so that's really what we are building into Moxie's with, like, again, within that chat functionality of starting to build those healthy habits and digital literacy skills early.
Yeah, I love that. Because when it shuts off at 8, it's like, because that's what happens a lot of times. Well, my friends are still on.
Yeah.
And can't I be on for a little bit longer? No, you know, it shuts off. So I love it.
Everyone's off. And then it's like, there's not that, like that friction of the parent being like, get off your device. No, I don't want to have this argument again. Like we discussed, you have to shut it off. And then for the, you know, for the girl that's using it, she's not experiencing that FOMO and that anxiety of missing out on those conversations and then coming back the next morning feeling so overwhelmed to have missed out on like these key social moments that like she had to miss because she had to shut off her device at a certain time. So it really starts to like level the playing field in terms of how how girls are also communicating online and again, building those healthy habits early.
Yeah. So good. So good. Well, Juliet, I have so many other questions, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Juliet Blake on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Juliet Blake. Juliet, I have absolutely loved our conversation so far. I have a few more questions for you. You know, are you seeing, like, are there any emerging tech that you see, like with AR and VR and things like that? And is any of that in Moxie's or plans for in Moxie's? And then you'd already talked about the tokens and being able to win and do the quest. So I'd love for you to explain that piece of Moxie's just a little bit more, and then we'll get into a few other things.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now when we're looking at emerging tech, we are bringing in AI to Moxie's. And so the first kind of component is with the moderation. So, you know, our chat is moderated with both AI and human moderators, which we have trained with our own proprietary data to not just, you know, block out like curse words and like bad, like basically, you know, like and in personal information. We are also looking to start to build out that nuance of that tween girl conversation and really starting to understand what that looks like so we can look ahead more at bullying and trolling and, again, those intricacies when it comes to potentially how girls are connecting online. So that's how we're using it right now. One of the things that I'm really excited about is we're actively exploring an academic industry partnership right now with an LLM NLP researcher out of UVA through their TIDE group. TIDE, T-Y-D-E, stands for Thriving Youth in a Digital Environment. And one of the things that we really want to learn from this research is what types of tools could we potentially create that helps to build digital literacy even more so within Moxie's. And so we don't necessarily know what that type of tool is right now, but we, again, really want to understand those intricacies of how tweens are connecting online and how we can be more of this like relational tech for them in a way that we are helping to redirect or helping to intervene in age and developmentally appropriate ways and offer suggestions. So like, for example, let's say a girl is in a group chat and, you know, she's typing, like sending a ton of things in a row, right? Like if someone is sending a bunch of messages in a row, something's going on for them, right? They could be super excited. They could be anxious. They could be mad. They could be like nervous. There's so many different emotions and feelings that might be because of. The person on the other side who's receiving all those texts, like you don't usually love to be the person on the other side getting like 10 text messages in a row. That also is like makes you really anxious and like, what is happening? Like, please stop. And so like, how could we essentially be able to see that and be like, okay, something's going on for this user. Like, what is it that's happening for this user? And how can we make a suggestion to be like, hey, looks like you might, you know, be like struggling a little bit with X, Y, and Z right now. Here are some recommendations, or you know what? It might be a good time to, you know, take a break and like, let's take like 5 deep breaths. Like we're going to do that with you. So like thinking about, and again, this is just like, could be potentially one tool of what that looks like. We don't know what that tool is necessarily going to be, but thinking about how we can almost like even redirect. So like maybe if that user is focused on like obsessing over like her outfit for the first day of school, right? And like a very normal thing that like girls want to talk about, but we're starting to see that it's going into this like unhealthy, obsessive, maybe comparative. We start getting into body image and like we start kind of moving into that. How can we see that and what can we send that girl to that is going to help solve this problem for her in a really, again, meaningful, healthy, developmentally and age appropriate way. So those are things that I'm really excited about, of how we can use AI for good. And I think for us right now, the biggest thing is AI is such a fast moving, it's so fast moving and so evolving. And it's really top of mind for parents, for educators. Like it's a big big conversation topic right now. And for us, it's kind of like, okay, how can we slow down to make sure that we put on this developmental lens in anything that we're doing with Moxie's? And so AI, very specifically, we are looking at it through this developmental lens because we know that how technology evolves in many cases tends to conflict with these sensitivities of youth development. And so really trying to think through a thoughtful approach around that.
Yeah, that's so good. And what I'm thinking, it's like predictive patterns, you know, is using it to identify patterns. Yeah. Juliet, do you have, and I've not asked you this question, but like on your board, do you have like some child psychologists type folks on your board that you can lean into?
Yeah. So we have child psychologists. We have youth tech researchers that we collaborate a lot with who are both child psychologists. So we also have child psychologists that we work with also from a content creation perspective, which goes into the Quest component. So that has been, when I say like we're research backed, like we are truly collaborating with experts in the space and looking at the research that they are also doing and figuring out ways to take that research and implement it into actual product design. And I think that's been kind of one of the biggest thing that has been missing. There's so much incredible research out there. And it's now out there, but like, okay, how can people actually use that research to inform how they're building products for youth? And that's really what we're doing at Moxies. And mm-hmm. we really collaborate often with these researchers to make sure that we are, again, building Moxies with this like well-being safe by design foundation.
Yeah, I love it. Well, we've talked a lot about girls. Is Moxies being developed for boys too? What because you've described to me girls and boys are different, you know, with this, you know, it's later for boys. Can you like talk a little bit about that, Juliet, yeah. and what's being done for boys?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's a really great question. For us, Moxies is being built for girls right now, right? Who knows what there could be in the future. But I think the biggest thing is the features that we've also pulled out for Moxies, which are group chat, avatars, and quests, where you're earning digital goods. Those are three very specific things that work for girls. Those features aren't translating to what boys are necessarily looking for. Like if we're generalizing, right? And what research shows. So that's kind of part one. Part two is that as you just kind of mentioned, boys develop later than girls. And so a lot of these things that are happening at this 8 to 12 year old range for girls, those are not happening for boys until they're like 13 plus. And so it's very different for them in terms of developmental milestones, especially in relation to their peers and their communities and how they are comparing themselves to their peers and what that looks like. So it is a very uniquely girl platform. Again, because girls are so negatively disproportionately affected when it comes to our current social platforms, that's why Moxies is for girls. Mm-hmm. However, our goal with Moxies is to essentially showcase how you can build, again, with this safe by design foundation and create this new foundation for how tech companies should be building with youth in mind, youth being both mm-hmm. boys and girls. And so a lot of the principles that I hope to, you know, be able to share more widely with our learnings from Moxies and how we're doing this, I see that as being able to inform developments of other platforms, whether we're developing them or somebody else is developing them for boys, and then also like even for older demos as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking, you know, you have so much experience and so much personal.
I have two girls and then I have a boy. And so I'm learning boy, but he's only four. But I know girls, and like that's what I know, and that's what I'm building for. Like I'm not the boy gaming expert. That's like not what I'm and I'm not gonna pretend to be.
We'll let somebody else handle that. We'll let maybe Christian look at the boy piece. What you know, and I don't know if you've thought through this, but how do you know, how are you going to know, Juliet, if it's working? How are you going to know if you're moving the needle on, you know, what you're trying to move the needle on, and that is a healthier self-esteem for girls?
Well, we're actually going to be researching it. So this summer, we have four PhD researchers that are joining us from top programs across the country in clinical psych and social work and education computer science as well. And we are having them start to track the efficacy of the platform and look at it in terms of well-being outcomes, look at it in terms of confidence and self-esteem and sense of belonging, more positive mental health outcomes. So that's something that we are starting to track out and look at, seeing, okay, what is the efficacy here? What's working? What can we do better? And that will continue, you know, we'll be able to take that and just continue to still, like, you know, prove it out and keep building better and more effectively. So We're going to start researching it this summer. So I'm really excited to be able to share some of those findings once we kind of get through this like first launch period.
Yeah, that is so exciting. Well, let me ask you this, Juliet, for tween girls out there dreaming of possibly being an entrepreneur one day, what kind of advice would you have for them?
I would say the biggest thing is build something that you love. Whatever it is, it has to be something that you, that it really speaks to you. I feel like I've seen a lot of founders who build something because they think it's going to make a lot of money, or they build something because they think it's going to sell, like they want to sell it. The passion that you bring into your business as a founder, especially when you're early and trying to get people to believe in you and take a chance on you, you can't fake that. And so if you love dogs, but you are building a product for cats, like, and you don't like cats, you're not going to be able to sell that product. You're not going to be able to get people to believe in you with that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be for you, right? Like, you could be building a product for your grandparents who have dogs because you want them to be able to find dog walkers if they can't get out of the house or something like that, right? Like, who knows what it could be, but you're doing it because you love dogs and you love your grandparents. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be for you, but I do think it has to be something that you can really sell people on how much you care about this problem.
Yeah, that is excellent advice. I love that. I love that. Well, you guys, you and Christian have three children of your own.
Yeah.
Juliet, and they're young. They're still very young, very stair steppers, just like our three were. But what are you teaching them right now about their own uniqueness, about kindness, belonging? What are you teaching your own children?
We talk about this with our kids a lot. Like, kindness is like the biggest word in our house. Like, was that kind? How did that make someone feel? How did that make your sibling feel? Because there's a lot of sibling tensions right now with them being so close in age. They are best friends, but they also fight like best friends and siblings. So we talk a lot about kindness. It's one of the things for us when we are having family dinner together. We ask everybody what their favorite parts of their day was, what the worst part of their day was, and we talk about why. And so for us, a lot of that has to do with kindness, how they treated somebody else, how something made them feel, what they can do about that, right? Not being able to necessarily control what other people do for you, but how you can react to that. That's one of the things we talk about a lot with them. And then with confidence, it's really interesting, especially having two girls and then a boy, and all my kids are really different. So they actually are the quintessential stereotypical birth order. So like, you know, the oldest first daughter, the middle child, and then like the baby boy, like it is so right. Stereotypical. So they're all very different in terms of how they respond to feedback, constructive criticism, like parentings, like we parent them, we kind of have to parent them different. And I think with confidence, that's been one of the things, especially with the girls. I think my son is plenty confident. I'm not worried about him right now. But you do start to see confidence things shift, even at these really young ages with the girls. And mm-hmm. So how we can the biggest thing that we've been doing is really celebrating each of their individual uniqueness and not trying to do anything to compare any of them. Very specifically the girls too, because they're 16 months apart and they're back-to-back grades. And so the last thing I want them to do is be competitive with each other and compare each other against the other one, because they are so different. They have completely different strengths. They have totally different interests. Their personalities are so different. And so that's been one of the biggest things for us, is building their individual confidence by celebrating their uniqueness, essentially, is what we've been doing.
That's beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, you're busy. You're a busy woman. let me ask you this. I mean, you've got these three little kids, you're running Moxie's, you're the wife to Christian. How do you personally build in self-care, rest, you know, even space for creative thinking about your business?
Yeah. I would be lying if I said it was easy and I was doing it really well. I think it does ebb and flow. I think there are moments where I'm like, okay, this is a sprint. This is a phase. Like, I know this is going to be an insane time. And then there are moments where I can be more leisurely and I can be more relaxed and I am not setting timers every 15 minutes to move on to my next task. Otherwise, like, I won't get things done. I'm in the timer phase right now. But one of the things that, you know, I really do try and prioritize is movement. We have a dog too, who is my first child. He is 9 years old, and we like really like trying to take him for a walk around, even if it's just around the block. So like, even if it's 10 minutes, prioritizing that movement for me is huge. I also will drive in my car with nothing on. So like no podcast, no music. I like will use that as time for processing and creative thinking. Like, especially if I'm going to drop off or running, like, you know, running back and forth. It just allows me to sort of think through some of the moments of my day. And that's not necessarily like, doesn't seem that luxurious, but like being alone in my car with like no children and nothing on like the radio or nothing on like coming out of the sound is actually like pretty clear. Like, it's a pretty clarifying moment for me. And then, I mean, my, I think too, like, one of the things that is always really important to me are my relationships. And so like, yes, my relationship with my husband, like making sure we have date night and time that are, that's just for the two of us, is something that we both have really busy schedules, but we really do try and prioritize. And again, some months it's worse than others. But like, it was his birthday last week. So like, we got to have a date night on a Thursday for his birthday, right? And so like, those types of things are special. Or even if like, just the two of us are driving in a car together for like 30 minutes, we're like, this is, what can we talk about? We can talk about anything. But even with friendships too. Yeah. So for me, like, I am one of those people that I love my family, I love my community, I love my friends. And so I really do try and prioritize those things when I have a moment. And then I kind of get drained from it. And then I need like 4 days to be by myself and not talk to anybody. And so then that self-care looks like getting into bed at 8 p.m. and watching a TV show. And like, for me, like, that is how I decompress. And that is how I just kind of reset. And just, I'm like, okay, Now I'm ready to go talk to people. I'm ready to do it again.
Yeah. It's a lot. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that about you and Kirsten, because I mean, he's got a big job too, right? He's a managing director of a big global investment firm in New York, and he's got a big job. So keeping that, you know, your marriage really strong and doing those things like the date nights or playing sports together or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and the other thing that we also get, the other thing that we do get to do is, and this is kind of one of the blessings of COVID, is he now has like his full work set up also at home. Blessing and curse, right? Because like, he can always be like plugged in and truly connected. Like, his work phone like is also in our home, like the landline of it. But the blessing of it is that he's not staying at the office until like 10 or 11 at night. He is home to put the kids also to bed most nights. We can have dinner together. And then he goes back to work. And so like, that's also actually a really special time for us, is unless we have dinner with friends or work dinners or events or things like that, we have dinner together every night. And so that is, again, time for us to just sit and do that. We also like usually watch Jeopardy. We record Jeopardy. It's like one of these things when we first got married and like he was in business school, we got like really into like 5 p.m. Jeopardy, because we never got to like watch TV at 5 o'clock or like have dinner together. So it became like a routine that has carried on 9 years later. But that's another really special thing that we get to do, and absolutely like a blessing from COVID, being able to like have that full work set up at home.
Yeah, I love that. You know, Julia, it's so funny. I'm laughing to myself because for a while we were doing family Jeopardy with our whole family, but then sometimes we'll do it with Alexa. And we'll say, Alexa, play Jeopardy. Oh. And, you know, just trying to keep our minds really sharp.
I know. So, I can't wait till family Jeopardy. I feel like we're like almost there. We've been doing this without the kids for so long. Like, it's going to be great when they can, join
in on it. Yeah. Or trivia. We do that a lot. Like, even when we go out to dinner as a family, you know, we may be talking about whatever it is that's going on, but then we'll try and do some trivia. Let's do trivia. And I have to say our grandson wins most of the time, to be honest with you. I'm like, how do you know about that particular snake? Yeah, you know, it's crazy. Well, let me ask you this. This is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I would say resilience. I think like resilience is one of those words that I have just really tapped into over the last 3 years. And then even, you know, previously with my first company, I think there are, you can have such a big vision. You can be dreaming big. You can know that you can be doing everything right. And like, it's still going to be so hard. And to be able to continue to keep going and pick yourself up, it's like that resilience, it is, it can really challenge you. But you have to be able to have that, because I even think back to last year, I was kind of like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to like get capital to build this, and like what am I doing? Like, I'm missing these moments with my young children. I'm working so hard. Like, what is to show from it? And I was just like, no, like, I know that this is important. Like, I'm building this for my kids. Like, this is why for me, like, I feel okay missing these moments too, because I am doing this to build a better future for them and their communities. But so much of that, I had to dig really deep and be like, I have to keep going. And I think with one of the biggest misconceptions about being a founder, especially tech, is you see those unicorns and you see those big fundraises and you see those big exits. My favorite quote is, an overnight success takes 15 years. And I think like that is because there is so much resilience and so much hard work. And in so many, yes, there are those crazy, like those not less than 1% of companies that have those, like, you know, in a year type of successes, but so many of those companies have taken so many years to build and have been iterated on so many different times and have pivoted and changed. And that's because they have a resilient founder and a resilient team.
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir here, Juliet. Sometimes it takes 40 years, but you know, I often think of the iceberg, you know, and the iceberg, that what you don't see beneath the surface is so much bigger than what you see up here, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just like any professional athlete, what we don't see are the hours and the hours and the hours in the gym. Yeah. What you don't see with a founder are those times where you're like, whoa, things are not going well right now. Are we going to make payroll? I mean, that's what you don't see, right? But make no mistake, it takes resilience. Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of to your earlier point about even the advice that you would give to a young entrepreneur, do what you love, have a passion. You got to believe in it yourself. That, never lose that belief, right? Because that's what propels the resilience.
Absolutely. Like, if once you stop believing in yourself, why would anybody else believe in you? Like, once you like bring in all that self-doubt, and obviously there are moments of self-doubt, and obviously there are moments of like, what am I doing? Am I insane? Like, yes. This is like, I don't know, but like, you have to be able to, again, dig back deep to that passion, which is what absolutely drives that resilience. I completely agree.
Mm-hmm. So good. Well, Juliet, this has been so amazing. I knew it would be, but it's even exceeded my expectations. And I just know that everything we've talked about, I believe, is going to resonate with our listeners. And I just wish you the best of luck with Moxies. Go, girl. You go and you build it. And it's going to be amazing. It's going to change lives.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to have been on here to have this conversation with you. And yeah, I'm so excited. We're 9 days out from our launch. So it is an exciting, exciting time for us. And again, it's been years of hard work and resilience that has gotten me here. So thank you for letting me share what we're doing and what we're building. And yeah, I can't wait. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.